Morning. Today's daf in Erevin. Daf Nun Hey. We're in the fifth parak of Erevin, and we are finishing up today the Agadata. The first two pages of the fifth parak of Erevin were Agadata. The discussion all started with the Mishnah using the word Kates of Ma'abrin. How do we extend a city? We're basically talking about creating a border for a city, so that after we've now established the border, then we're going to have a tchum. We're going to have 2,000 amas where a person can walk 2,000 amas outside the border of the city. So we're talking about making a border around the city, and so the Gemara segued into a discussion of what's the proper pronunciation of the Mishnah, and then the Gemara went for nearly two dafim, talking about the importance of articulating, enunciating, and pronouncing all the words of the Torah correctly, and just simply speech, meaning it's not enough to just simply hear Torah and to think Torah, but you have to actually speak out the Torah. And the Gemara spent 2 days discussing how that is a successful way of preserving the Torah and really getting the Torah inside of you. Yesterday's Gemara really reflected this strongly when the Gemara told the story of Bruria, who saw a student who was learning, but it was just kind of like mumbling the words. He was doing so very quietly, and she reprimanded him and perhaps even kicked him. And you get that idea, that sense that learning needs to be done out loud. You can't just simply think about the learning; you have to speak out the learning. Okay, that's been the Gemara for the past couple of days. We should be beginning on Nun Hey, but we are a little bit behind. We're on Nun Dal Amud Beis, and we're at the two dots Tana Rabbanan. It's right in the middle of Nun Dal Amud Beis. The Gemara now discusses a very basic discussion in terms of the Masor of Torah Shabbat Peh. Meaning Torah Shabbat Peh is two parts of Torah, Torah Shabbat Chav, Torah Shabbat Peh. I think we're all familiar. We spend every day learning a daf of Torah Shabbat Peh. And obviously Torah Shabbat Peh means that when Moshe was received the Torah in Sinai, so there were two parts of the Torah. One Torah Shabbat Chav, that's the written law, that's the Chamishi Chumshe Torah. Okay, exactly how did that happen? Did it all come in one fell swoop, or was it written incrementally as they were going through the Midbar? Okay, that's a discussion, a debate amongst the Tanaim. But right now, we're talking Torah Shabbat Peh. In other words, there was a transmission from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe about Torah Shabbat Peh, the oral tradition. And then what did Moshe do? So he passed it on. First Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Right? Moshe kibbol Torah miSinai. Moshe received the Torah from Sinai. Umasor leYoshua, and he gave it over to Yoshua. Yoshua is the Canaan, and the Masorah of Torah Shabbat Peh goes on. So far, so good. But basically now, the Gemara is going to give us a process in which Moshe took the Torah that he learned and taught it over to the Jewish people. So right now, we're going to see just the very basics of how Moshe transmitted the Torah Shabbat Peh from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the Jewish people. Tana Rabbanan. Middle of Nun Dal Amud Beis. Case that said a Mishnah. So what's the order? What's the correct order of Mishnah? Mishnah over here, meaning, again, Torah Shabbat Peh, that Rashi uses that terminology over here. So Moshe li made me pi agvura. So Moshe learned it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nichnas Aaron v'shanalom. So now Aaron comes in. So Moshe teaches the entirety of Torah Shabbat Peh over to Aaron. V'shanalom Moshe pirko. Nistalik Aaron v'yashal v'smol. Now Aaron now steps to the side, and Aaron moves to the left of Moshe. We'll talk later on a little bit about the positioning, and to the left, to the right, and where should you be, but okay, we'll come back to that point in just a moment. V'yashav the small Moshe, nichnesu banav, in comes the sons of Aaron. V'shanal and Moshe pirkan. And Moshe now taught the sons of Aaron. So this is now Moshe teaching the Torah for a second time. Nistalku banav elazar yashav liyamin Moshe v'itamar l'smol. And now we have the two sons flanking Moshe. Elazar to the right, Itamar to the left. Elazar was older. V'itamar l'smol Aaron, and Itamar went to the left of Aaron. Okay, so we have now flanking Moshe, the two sons of Aaron. Elazar on the right side of Moshe. Itamar on the left side, but on the left side of Aaron, because remember, Aaron was directly to the left of Moshe. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Lo Alan Aaron Liyamin Moshe. Chozer. Now, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees in terms of this exact configuration, and he says, no, that Aaron went immediately to the right side of Moshe, and not to the left side of Moshe. And again, more about that in just a moment. Nichnasu Zekenim V'shanu Lehem Moshe Pirkan. Now comes in the Zekenim, the elders. Okay, they're always the Canaan. It's just a question of who they were, right? There was definitely changing of the guard in the Midbar itself, Right? Rashi speaks that out a couple of times throughout Chumash. But in other words, the Kenim, the elders. So they came in. Now Moshe is teaching it for the third time. Remember, he already once started to Moshe, twice to Moshe's sons, and now a third time to the Zekenim. Nistalka Zekenim nichnasu kol am. Now Zekenim moved. Now over here, the Brisa doesn't tell us where the Zekenim moved to. Apparently there were a lot of them. Let's assume there were 70 of them. So, okay. So in other words, somehow they moved to the side, and now comes in the entire nation, the Jewish nation, Vishan Lahem Moshe, Pirkan. And now Moshe taught. And Moshe taught the nation now for what would be his fourth time teaching it. Nimtzu'u biyad Aaron arba, biyad banav shlosha, biyad zekeinim shnayin, uviyad kol am echad. So how many times did everyone hear from Moshe? So Aaron heard it from Moshe four times. His sons heard it three times. Zekeinim heard it twice. And the Jewish nation heard it from Moshe one time. Good. Nistalek Moshe. Now Moshe walks away. Vishanalam Aaron pirk o. Now Aaron becomes the teacher. Aaron teaches Tarsha Ba'peh. Aaron's teaching it to his two sons. Aaron's teaching it to the Zekenim. And Aaron's teaching it to the nation all at one time. So, Nistalek Aaron, Shanalam Banav. Aaron moves aside. The Aaron's sons, Elazar and Itamar, are now teaching it. Nistalku Banav, they move aside. Shanalam Zekenim Pirkan. And the Zekenim now teach it. Nimsa Biyadakol Arba'a. Now, if you are not Moshe, not his two sons, not Aaron's two sons, and not the Zekenim, how many times did you hear the Torah? So you heard it four times. You heard it once from Moshe, once from Aaron, once from Aaron's sons, and a fourth time from the Zekenim. Mikan Amar Rabbi Eliezer. Now, Rabbi Eliezer says, good. So this is not just a historical event, but this teaches us how many times we need to hear hear on any given particular Torah. I'm Rabbi Eliezer Chayev Adon L'shana Stanal Talmido Arba Pamim. So you got to review with your Talmud four times. Okay, minimum. Okay, so in other words, there needs to be, in addition to the Daf Yom in the morning, there needs to be three more Dapim every day on the same Daf. Okay? I'm not sure if...
Four times a shot.
All right, I'm not sure if I'm ready to do it three more times every day, but I should. In other words, that's four times. So the Kavachomer, and the Gemara says, and it's a no-brainer, meaning it's a simple logical argument. Because think of it from Aaron's perspective, meaning he heard it from Moshe, who heard it from Akash Baruch Hu. Can't get much closer to the source. Can't. So, if you're not hearing it from Moshe, you're hearing it from just somebody. Today I'll represent that just somebody. So, if you're hearing it from just somebody, so for sure you got to hear it four times. Okay. Good. Rabbi Akiva Omer. So, minayin shechayev adam l'shanos l'tamido ad shilamdenu. So, Rabbi Akiva says, what do you mean four times?
More.
Just, yeah, keep going. Meaning, until he gets it. Keep reviewing the Torah again and again and again until he gets to Shanem of Lamdas Bnei Yisrael. The Pasuk says, V'lamda, meaning the obligation really is to teach him. Meaning it's not just simply a rote, here I'm teaching, there you're sitting, and maybe there'll be some sort of communication between the two of us. But Limda means that no, the mitzvah of Limda Torah is to successfully transmit from person A to person B. That's the mitzvah of Limud HaTorah. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva says, there's no number. We're not going to put a number on it. Four times, no. As many times as necessary. And you got to teach it them so many times that they get it. Meaning, and not only they get it, but they have it organized, systematic. They understand exactly what's going on over here. Shenemar Sima Bifihem. You put it in their mouth. Now, obviously, it can't be literally you put the words in their mouth, but it means to the point in which they could say it on their own. And furthermore, you have to be marapanim. Now, literally, the words don't translate well into English. Marapanim, show a face. What does that mean in terms of instruction, in terms of learning? Rashi writes, lelamdola says tam bedvarav. Meaning, it's more than that. You just have to simply teach them the Torah, but give them some sort of explanation. Right? Give some rationale, some svara. Bechol asher yuchal, v'lo yomar kach shamati. And don't say to them, says Rashi, you know, here's what I know. Okay, now you figure it out. And Rashi says, and this mar upon him, you go back to the first parak of Erevin, Shayomer al Tamitar, Umar lo upon him. Right? You remember back in the first parak Daf Yud Gimel, we had Rabbi Meir who was able to go in every direction in halacha and give some sort of rational explanation as to why that's so. Shenemar, back to the Gemara, Ve'elam Mishpatim, Asher Tosim Lefneim. Okay, good. Period. Adkan. Okay, so what do we got over here? A very basic discussion of how Torah Shabbat Peh was transmitted from Moshe to the Jewish people. Moshe ended up teaching it four times. Aaron ended up hearing it four times. And the Gemara says that we learn from here that any transmission of Torah must be, according to the Tanakhama's viewpoint, must be said over four times. According to Rabbi Akiva, as necessary, as many times necessary, in terms of communicating the Torah from one generation to the next, from one person to the next.
How long did it take to do that?
It's a fair question. I'm curious also. I don't know. V'ligmeru kula mimoshe. Okay, the Gemara has some very simple questions. Question number one says the Gemara. Why not everyone learning straight from Moshe? Meaning, or, no, everyone did hear from Moshe. I take that back. Right, why not all four times from Moshe to the Jewish people? Right, why not? So, mm-hmm. Okay, answer. Very simple answer. Because respect is shown to Aaron's son, and to the Zekanim. So they're given the kavod of having actually to say the Torah themselves. V'neil Aaron v'nigmar mi-Moshe, v'lei alo banav v'ligmar mi-Aaron, v'leil ha-Zekanim v'lofo mi-banav, v'leizlo v'ligmar l'kulo Yisrael. Well, Gemara now wants to know, why not make it a chain? Meaning, Moshe teach Aaron, Aaron teaching his sons, and his sons teaching the Jewish people. So why not make it a chain? I mean, anyway, it's going to become a chain from one generation to the next. So why not over there just simply make it a chain? Why did everyone have to hear it directly from Moshe? I think the answer is pretty self-evident. Came into Moshe mipi agvura gamar, mistayim ilsa. So the Gemara's answer is because hearing it, you can't compare hearing it from Moshe versus hearing it from his secondary source. Right, Moshe is a primary source. Moshe heard it mipi agvura. The Gemara's words are mistayim ilsa. Okay, Mistayim Ilsa, again, a word that's just hard to translate into English. Siyum Ilsa basically is divine assistance, meaning it's better. It's qualitatively better to hear it directly from Moshe. Rashi says, by the way, if you take a look at Rashi, Mistayim Ilsa, Rashi says, Liskayim Belibo Lahavin Maher. It's we're hearing it from Moshe. In terms of processing the information, it's just better. So you're going to get it quicker. Okay. Amar. Okay, I mentioned earlier, we're going to talk a little bit more about the actual configuration. Remember, after Moshe told it to Aaron, Aaron moved over to what side of Moshe? So that's subject to a debate. So the Tanakhama's viewpoint is that he moved to the left side of Moshe, and Rabbi Yehuda says, no, he moved to the right side of Moshe. Now, Amar. Rabbi Yehuda Amar La'olam Aaron Li'amin Moshe Chozer. Okay, so Rabbi Huda's viewpoint is that he went to the right of Moshe, which prompts the Gemara to ask the following question. Look, we have a Braisa, and the Braisa reads as follows. Three people who are walking on the way. The Rav stands there in the middle. The Gadol stands to his right, and the Kun stands to his left. So in other words, when you have three people, and you are configuring the three people, so you put the second of Gedula to the right of the person, and the third to the left. So, it's Lema Rabbi Yehuda Yivala Rabbanan. It seems as though that espouses the viewpoint of Rabbi Yehuda, not the Chachamim, okay? Which is a fair conclusion, but the Gemara says, here, you don't have to say that. Afilu Tamer Rabbanan. Could very well be that our discussion of Aaron and Moshe subscribes to the viewpoint of the Chachamim. And so, if that's so why not move Aaron when the sons are now coming over and standing on the side of Moshe? Why don't we first put Aaron, who's, you know, for obvious reason, greater than his sons, why don't we put Aaron to the right of Moshe and then flank the sons to the right of Aaron, to the left of Moshe, but why not put Aaron to his right? But the Gemara answers, Mishum Tircha de Aaron, because of Tircha de Aaron, meaning, look, if it's just Moshe and Aaron, so Moshe's to the right and Aaron's to the left. And the Gemara assumes, I mean, it's like a Dover Pashut, it's obvious, that if it's just two, so we're not going to put Aaron to the right, meaning the right's going to be the position of the greater, okay, Yamin. okay, for obvious and maybe not so obvious reasons. So if it's just the two of them, obviously Moshe is going to be there to the right and Aaron's to the left. And then it's just a question of, now that Aaron's to the left, do we reposition Aaron? That's the machlokes between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda. But in terms of if there are three and we're configuring the three, so then yes. So then the greatest in the middle, the second to the right, and the third to the left.
But didn't Aaron learn from Moshe face to face?
Right, but after that, now Aaron's going to move to the side of Moshe. And there it's poshut that Aaron's going to move to the left side of Moshe. Yeah. Then when the sons come in, are we going to reposition Aaron, or the Tanakham says no? Leave Aaron where he is, and then just put the two sons on the two sides.
Just assuming Aaron normally sits, probably.
Right. This, I assume over here, it's funny, I assume over here there's no sitting. I assume it's standing. Why do I assume that? The beginning of the second parak of Megillah has a discussion of how when Torah is taught, Torah has to be taught standing up. We're all sitting down, so see the second parak of Megillah for why we're all sitting down. Okay, Rabbi Preda Havalei Ahu Talmida Dehavalei Tanilei Arba Mei Zimnei. Now, as I mentioned just a moment ago, how many times do you have to transmit the Torah from Rebbe to Talmud? So the Tanakham says four times, and Rabbi Kiva says you just keep going. And apparently, okay, this is just my suggestion, Rabbi Preda is going like Rabbi Kiva, meaning apparently. Or maybe not, but okay. Anyway, either way, Rabbi Preda had a student, and he had to go over it with him 400 times. Okay? Imagine the... In other words, we're a little more systematic in terms of how we teach. You know, we have a shiur, there's a classroom, there's a lot of students. You know, in the good old days, you know, everything was transmitted one-on-one. Okay, those were the good old days. Now, you know, we are much more systematic in it. And obviously, you know, at a loss, meaning it's hard to teach a room full of people. But there's this particular student who had to learn it 400 times, Vigamer. And then after the 400 times, so he got it. Okay, so it took him a little bit longer to process all the information, but eventually he gets it. Yumachad Baila Milsa de Mitzvah. So there was one day where Reb Preda was teaching, but he had one foot out the door, meaning he had to do something, there was a mitzvah that was necessary. So in other words, and the student knew it, he felt it. He felt that Reb Preda, even though he taught it to him 400 times, but still, well, he had a foot out the door. So Tanalei Velo Gamar. So he taught it 400 times, and the student didn't get it. So Amalei Hai Namaishna. So Reb Preda says, I understand. I know usually, you know, the shiur goes long with me and you. I get that. But after 400 times, you normally get it. What happened today? Amalei Midei Yishaita Damalei Lamar Ika Milsa De Mitzvah Ischei Ledatai. So the student explains to Rebbe Preda, I'll tell you what's different about today. I knew you were at the door. So even though it's 400 times, but it was 400 times with a foot out the door. He says, I couldn't concentrate, I couldn't focus. Because every single moment I kept getting sidetracked. Is he leaving now? Is he leaving now? And I just simply couldn't focus. Hashtakai mar. So amrlei, hav da'atech v'asni lech. So our prayer says, good. So get comfortable, sit down, contrary to what I just said, stand up, and let's do it again. And he went over it with him another 400 times with assurances, I'm not going anywhere, I'm here. And he went over to with him another 400 times. Tani le dalme zim nachrina. So now this is now for the day 800 times that he went over a particular learning. Nafka bas kalav amar le nichalech de leis falach dalme ashane. Oh, de tizchi at v'derech la alma de asay. Out comes the Basco, and the Basco says, look, I'm prepared to reward you. The reward is going to be either another 400 years of living on this earth, or more Olam Haba. So, Amar, Deniski Ana, Vidare Lama Dase. So he says, I would like me and my generation for extra Olam Haba. Again, whatever that means. However we are to understand that. So Amar Makash Baruch Hu Tunu Lo Zu Vizu. And so he chose wisely, and so Kadosh Baruch Hu says, good, so let's do both. So he gave him some extra level of Olam Haba, and he gave him the extra 400 years. Okay. Amar Rav Chista, Ein Torah Niknas Ela B'Simanim. So you want to acquire Torah, so you an acquisition of Torah, a proper acquisition of Torah, is done through Simanim. Simanim, mnemonics basically, memory aids, ways of organizing and structuring the Torah so that to you now it's an open book. The Gemara Darshan. The word is sima, which is with a sin, which comes from the word tasin, placement. But over here, the Gemara plays on the word simanim. The sin and the samach sound identical to one another. So the word, I know it's missing the nun, but b'derech remez, the Torah is telling us, attach simanim. Give it mnemonics, give it memory aids. Organize the information. Shamar Rav Tachlifa Mamrava Mimarava Aza Amar Kamadirabi Abau Amar Asamiya Samasnisala. Look, you have your source, Ana Mehacha Masnisala. We arrive at the same conclusion, but from a different source. The Pasuk says in Yirmiyahu, Hatsivalach Siyunim. Place Siyunim. You know the word Siyun as actually markers. So that you know. Right, every time we have a burial, so we make it siyun, some sort of marking around, so we know where exactly the body is buried. So simalach asut siyunim la Torah. Here we're talking about siyun in terms of Torah, meaning making markers around the Torah. Again, organize the Torah, structure the Torah in a way where it becomes you become proficient in it. The Gemara now spends a little bit of time discussing this word siyun. How do I know that it means making a siman, a mark? The Pasuk in Yecheskel says that when you see Etzem Adam, when someone's buried in the ground, so make it Tzion, make a marking over like I described just a moment ago. Rabbi Elazar also is going to bring us to this point, but through a third Pasuk. And Molachachma Chotiat, Omoda Levina Tikra. Tell Chachma she is your sister. Okay, we'll explain that in just a moment. And Umoda Levina Tikra, and refer to Bina as a very close relative, right? In Rus, also we have that term Moda. Moda means right Ula Naami Yesh Yesh Moda. Okay, good. Right, fine. Anyway, the word Moda means make it a very close relative. Asim Moda Im Latara, and again the idea is make a Moda for Torah, meaning, right, well, we'll get to the Moed in just a moment. Right now, this is Moda. Right, make Moda la Torah, meaning, again, organize the Torah, structure the Torah, so that it becomes now a close relative. You know it as well as you know your sister. Right, Rashi in Kedushin, this Gemara, this very same Gemara is found in Kedushin. Rashi in Kedushin, when the Pasuk says, Amol HaChachma Chotiat, tell Chachma you're my sister. So there are, if I remember correctly, I haven't looked it up last night, but if I remember correctly, we have two pshatim. Either, in other words, no Torah as well as you know your sister, meaning make it like a family member, or if I'm not mistaken, Rashi over there says, you know the Torah asks you your sister, right? Everyone knows that. So not only should that halacha be obvious to you, but all the halachas of the Torah should become as clear to you as the halacha of a man's not allowed to be with a sister. Okay, Rav Amar, Asay Moadim LaTorah. Okay, now, yesterday I told you we did not have a plug for the Daf Yomi. Today we will have a plug for the Daf Yomi. So the make a Moed LaTorah. Rashi, Kavu Itim LaTamideim Shiyadu Eith Lavo V'lishnos. Establish times, meaning it's not just enough to that we learn Torah, but it has to be with a regularity, with a consistency. So that, the Gemara says, we learn from this Pasuk in Mishlei, of Emor L'Chachma Achotiyat Umoda Levina Tikra, and we're going to play on the word Moda Moed, make established times. V'hayne Dam Rav Dimi Bar Chama Bar Dizmai Dichtiv, and the Gemara goes on to point out that this requirement of not just learning Torah, but organizing the Torah, structuring the Torah, creating mnemonics for the Torah, meaning making Torah accessible to all of us. So the Gemara points out, that's also, we could see it from another pshat as well. The pasuk at the end of Sefer Devarim writes, "Lo b'shamayim v'lo me'ev liyami," that the Torah is not up in the heavens and it's not me'ev liyam; it's on the other end of the ocean. Lo b'shamayim shi'im b'shamayim hiata tzarech la'alos achareha. In other words, let's say Torah wasn't shamayim; it's not. But let's say it weren't shamayim. Okay, let's go get it. Meaning, our requirement to gain access to the Torah is such that even if it were in Shemayim, we need to go get it. Now it's not, but that's just simply the idea of, that doesn't exempt us. And And if Torah was across the ocean, so we'd all have to sail the ocean in order to gain access to the Torah. Again, the point is it's not, but in other words, that's what we would have to do. There is the requirement to basically work at understanding and accessing the Torah. And so, again, it's the same basic idea that the Gemara pointed out at the bottom of the previous Amud, which is that there is this requirement of organizing and structuring the Torah in such a way so that we have a basic understanding of the Torah. Rav Amar Lo B'Shamayim Lo Timsa B'Mishim Magbi Adato Alei Kashamayim. As long as we quote this pasuk in Devarim, so the Gemara now goes on to explain other ways to say pshat in the pasuk. Lo B'Shamayim, he is not talking about. I'm saying not this. It doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. It could be in addition to what we said previously. Lo B'Shamayim is talking about a state of mind, meaning don't be heavenly when you're learning the Torah, but rather you should be humble. If it's an idea that sounds familiar, it should be, because we expressed that idea often in yesterday's daf. Lo timsa b'misha magbia dato aleha kishamayim, v'lo timsa b'misha marchiv dato aleha kayam. So if you display any form of arrogance, in other words, you think you're as high as the heaven, you think you're as expansive as the ocean, you're not going to be one who's going to be able to learn Torah. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Lo B'Shamayim Hi Lo Timsa Begasei Ruach V'Lo Me'ev Aliyam Hi Lo Timsa La B'Sacharnim V'Lo B'Tagarim. So Lo B'Shamayim is an idea that you can't have Gasus HaRuach. No arrogance can come into your Torah learning. You must learn Torah learning with humility and simplicity, and no arrogance. And Lo Me'ev Aliyam Hi, meaning, and also the traveler, right? The Sacharnim, right? Traveling from one city to the other, the merchants. So the Rashi refers to the Gemara back on yesterday's daf, right? Of Nira Ve'ino Nira, meaning that if you want to be versed in Torah, so there has to be a significant amount of time where you basically lock yourself up in the Beis Medrash and really devote yourself to Limud HaTorah. Okay, I can breathe. Just for a second. I promise. It's not gonna be too long. And Ad Kan Divrei Agadata, a very powerful Agadata, really, of these last couple of Dapim, that discuss the importance of learning the Torah, but not just learning Torah, but really getting it down. Meaning, right, saying it over, organizing the Torah, no arrogance, really just two really beautiful Dapim in terms of how much effort, energy, and methodology we should have in terms of learning the Torah, and even 400 times, or at least four. Let's put it that way. Okay, and now a resumption today of Halacha Hilchas Erevin. Okay, as I mentioned already when we started the Masechta, Prakim 4 and 5, and I guess you could say 3 as well, but Prakim 4 and 5 of Masechta Erevin is dedicated to Tchum. Tchum Shabbos is the idea, which we've gone over many times, but again, as we just learned, review never hurts. In fact, review is important. The idea of Tchum is that you are circumscribed on Shabbos to a 2,000 amah limit, where you cannot walk beyond 2,000 amahs. Now, 2,000 amahs from where? So if you're in the middle of nowhere, so it's 2,000 amahs from where you are. Meaning, so if you're standing in the middle, if you started Shabbos in the middle of nowhere, so where you are now, square it, dalan amos, and then 2,000 amahs in every direction. Okay, again, basic machlokas, whether it's a radius or whether we box the 2,000 amos, the halach is going to be that we're going to box the 2,000 amos. Fine. What if you're within a city? So if you're within a city, so then the halach is going to be, it's 2,000 amos outside the city limits. Meaning the entirety of the city becomes to you a dalan amah area. Obviously the city is much larger than 4 amos, but the city to you becomes a dalan amah area. And then from that point forward, 2,000 amos. Now, for us to try to put this into practical terms, it's very difficult. Meaning, think about it. We live in Boca Raton. Okay? From Boca to Miami, which is, you know, a good 40-mile trek, in other words, which is obviously much more than 2,000 amos, but really, I ask you halakhically, where does Boca end? Where does the city of Boca end? Now, granted, by the way, that there are limits, our city limits to Boca. And I'm sure you all know we don't actually live in Boca, but that's neither here nor there, right? wherever we live. But in other words, but there's city limits. But halachically speaking, however, there's no real end to the city, because when you go south, so the next thing after Boca is Deerfield. And the next thing after Deerfield, then there's just going to be a continuity of city after city after city. So there's really no break in the city. When we discuss the end of the city, we're talking about the actual physical end of the city. Meaning where the inhabitants ends, where the residence ends, and after that, It's desert. It's doesn't have to be desert. But in other words, right, there's nothing. That's really what we mean when we say the city ends. So we're now going to be discussing really the limits of a city. That's going to be our discussion. The basic point that we're going to keep making again and again is that we square it. Now, when I say square, I mean working on a north, south, east, west plane, right? And you're going to see this again and again. So you'll forgive my lack of accuracy, but let's say the city is circular. I mean, I know we made this point already in the Mishnah, but it's okay. We'll say it again. So if the city's shape is circular, so before we even talk about where the city ends, we draw a square around the circle, that becomes city limits. 2,000 amas is not going to be measured until you get to the square. Let's say there's just a protruding house outside the city. That's going to push the entire border of the city to that one protruding house. Okay? And all these types of discussions are now going to take us through the remainder of today's daf. We start with the Gemara, we're on in Hamad Aleph, and we are a third of the way down at the two dots. Tana Rabbana. Ketzad ma'abrin es ha'arim. So how do we literally extend the city? Okay? So, number one, arucha kamoshihi. So, if it's arucha, you leave it as it is. What does that mean? Stay tuned, we're going to discuss the opening statement of the Bryce in just a moment. Agula, what if the city is round? Osin la zavios merubos. So the first thing you do, we square it. We're going to square the city, like I have over there on the board. Ein osin la, sorry, merubos, ein osin la zavios. What if the shape of the city is square, so then you don't add corners? The obvious question, which hopefully everyone right now is thinking is, well, is it isn't that obvious? Meaning it already has its square, it already has its corners. So what's the Braisa teaching us? Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to ask that very question. Haisa rechava mitzad echad, uksara mitzad acher. What if it's the shape of a trapezoid? Okay? I illustrated for that on the board above me. So roono so ki'ilu hishave. So what do we do? So we're going to have to make 90 degree angles. So what we're going to do with the trapezoid is that now we're going to create 90 degree angles, and now square. The shape of the city is going to be
rectangular
or square, either way. Haya bayis echad yotzin kemin pagum, o shnei batim yotzin kemin shnei pagumim, rono so ki ilu chut matuach aleihem. Let's say I have a house which is protruding. So now, basically, it's almost a straight line except for that one protruding house. That one protruding house allows us to take the line, the border of the city, and move it out to that one protruding house. And if you have two houses protruding, so you draw a line, right, parallel to those two protruding houses. The Gemara is going to ask another obvious question. If I'm drawing out a line for one protruding house, I'm for sure going to draw a line out for two protruding houses, and the Gemara is going to wonder why I mentioned two protruding houses. Haisa asui kimin keshes, o kimin gam. Let's say the city shape is either like a rainbow or like a perpendicular L, an L shape. The Gemara refers to it as gam, gam from the Greek letter gamma, right, which apparently when written also produces basically an L shape. So what do you do? Rodos okiluhi malea batim vechatzeros. So what do? We fill in the gap. The L shape I did not draw on the board.
He did.
That's the rainbow.
That's a rainbow.
That's pretty straightforward. So we have an L shape. So what we're going to do with the L shape square. Is just simply fill in
square.
The L.
Square.
Again, the idea comes out to the same idea again and again. We square, and because we square, so now that area is going to be filled in as if it's now part of the city, and Tchum is only measured after we square. Okay, most of our day is going to be the discussion of the rainbow city. Right? The city that's shaped like a rainbow. So what do? We fill in. So basically right now, we're going to say it really simple. We're going to fill in from the bowstring to the bow. Now, I know you could make an argument.
What are the angles of the...
Yeah,
right? What if you have...
I'm starting to think like you, by the way, and I'm getting a little nervous. So you could make an argument that what we could do is we could also create a 90-degree angle over here on the corners as well. As you're going to see over the course of today's daf, the Gemara is never going to entertain that possibility. Huh. I think the reason why Okay, and this is my the way I'm looking at it, and please feel free to disagree. I think the reason why is because throughout the entirety of our discussion this morning, we're going to view this as the south side of the city.
How do we know that it wasn't really angled and it was round that they use?
I totally understood, but I'm just telling you, the reason why the Gemara will never discuss these bottom corners over here is because throughout this entire discussion, this is viewed as the south side of the city. And so therefore, there is no... If this is all south, I know now it just made a right-hand turn. And I know now it's northbound. But if this is the south end of the city, so therefore, there's no... You don't square a south side.
What about a protruding house on the top of the horseshoe?
Well, hold on a second. Right now, our discussion today is going to be the area inscribed in the bow and the bowstring. That's going to be the entirety of our discussion for today. Okay, but look, again, I have the same issue bothered me as well. Okay. Are we done with the Braisa? I believe we are. Amar, yes we are. Okay, so we're done with the Braisa. So the Braisa basically went over the following configurations. Four configurations. Squaring the circle, squaring the trapezoid, squaring the L, and filling in the bow and the bowstring. Okay, good. All speaking to the same basic point. Amar Mar, Arucha Kamoshihim. Now, if it's a filled in city, if it's a complete city, so leave it alone. So Pshita, the Gemara says, okay, but what's that teaching us? Lotzricha Daricha V'Ketina. The Gemara says, I'll tell you what it's teaching us. Let's say the shape of the city is rectangular. In other words, it's all 90 degree angles, but it's not a square. Length does not equal width, but rather length is greater than width, otherwise known to us as a rectangle. So I might have thought, here's what we're going to do. What we're going to do is square the rectangle, meaning make, just like over here, we're basically making the border so that it is rectangular, so that's square in shape. I might have thought that with a rectangular city, just simply make it so that now length equals width. Okay, even in the Havamina, we're going to end up rejecting this, but even the Havamina, hard to say exactly what the Gemara is going to do over here. Meaning if we have a rectangular shape, and now we want to make this, meaning which way are we going to go? We're going to go to the north, we're going to go to the south.
What do you think of it as two squares attached to each other?
Because, you're just assuming it's 2x and x. Meaning, but what if it's not 2x and x? What if it's 3x and x? So, anyway, the point being is that we're not going to do this. In other words, we're not going to make it so that it's going to be. It does not have to be a square shape. The main point is the 90 degree angles. That's becoming the critical aspect of making an area around the city.
Right,
we're assuming. I understand. To keep it simple, we're assuming a plane. But you're right. In other words, it could be that it's going to be almost impossible. But yeah, we're right now just speaking in the two dimensional world, just to understand shapes at its most basic level. Now, the next point that Brisa makes is that if it's square, we don't give it corners. Which now we could say, honestly, we knew that already. What's the Braisa teaching us when it says Murubaus? Pshita l'sricha demarba v'lo marba b'ribua olam. So the Gemara says, here's the Chiddush. Let's say it's squared, but it doesn't follow ribua ha'olam. We talked about this the other day. In that, look, there's due north, there's due south, there's due east, due west. Let's say the city does have 90 degree angles, but, like a baseball field, okay, that's all I see. It doesn't follow Rivua Ola. So in other words, its lines don't correspond to the due north, due south, due east, due west. So I now might have thought, here's what we need to do. What we need to do now is basically square it so that it follows the latitudes and longitudes of due north and due east and due south and due west. That's what I might have thought as a Havamina, which we learned just the other day. We do that in terms of the four Amos, right? Four Amos becomes 5.6. Why? Because of the hypotenuse. Okay. Anyway, the point being is that no, once it has a square shape, regardless of which direction it's facing, once it has a square shape, that becomes now the external limits of the city, and we don't square it based on due north, east, southwest. Okay, next. In the Gemara, Ma'od Yotem Alivar B'Yirvu Olam Kamash Malan. Haya Bais Echad Yotzei Kamin Pogam Oshnei Batim Yotzei Kamin Shnei Pegimim. And the Gemara now asks, again, what is the obvious question? Hashta Bais Echad Amar Shnei Batim Yibayeh. If we're going to extend the line of the city out for one house, of course we're going to extend it out for two houses. What's a chiddush? Lo tzricha mishtei ruchos. So the Gemara says, two sides. In other words, this idea that I'm extending the city line, just for the purpose of one house, I might have thought, again, a havami, I might have thought that that's a kula that will allow it to occur for one side of the city. But for two sides of the city, that may be too much. So, ma'u detema, miruach achar, amrina mishtei ruchos, amrina kamash malan. So the chiddush is that, no, we'll do this for two sides. Now, it's interesting. The Gemara, what about the third side? What about a fourth side? Meaning, it sounds like from the Gemara, and I'm totally unsure. But it's curious why the Gemara over here limits us to do this for two sides of the city. Why not three? Why not four? Or maybe it would be true as well. Honestly, I do not know. Haisa asui kimin kesha, so kimin gamro, no so ki iluhi malaya batim echatzerus, umodin mimenu lahalan apayim ama. Okay, and now for the remainder of today's daf, we talk now about our rainbow city. City is shaped like a rainbow, and basically now what the Bryce has told us, in the case of the L, so we said we're going to fill in the gap, that's pretty visually clear. By the way, this is all gestalt, meaning we're really talking about perception from a gestalt basis, and just in terms of filling in the missing parts. Here, however, on this rainbow, essentially what we're doing now is we're filling in the area between the bow of the city and the bowstring. Now, the bowstring is not there, but in other words, it's very easy to visualize the bowstring just simply going across. And we fill in that gap so that when we're measuring tchum, we're not measuring tchum from this area over here, but rather tchum starts here and it goes 2,000 amas from the actual bowstring. Gemara now is going to point out a number of details regarding this city. First of all, the Gemara starts the discussion here. Amrav Huna. Ir ha'asuya kimin keshes. I'm sorry, ha'asuya kimin keshes. Im yesh ben shnei rasha pachos me'arba alafim, ama, modada la min ha'yeser. V'im lav, modada la min ha'keshes. So Rav Huna says, look, this halacha we just learned regarding the city shape like a bow. And this idea that we're measuring from the bowstring, that's only if, says Rav Huna, the distance from here to here is less than 4,000 amas.
Well, that's like two overlapping...
And what that becomes now, basically, is that's two overlapping tchums. Right. So that basically now we have an encroachment of... let me make it a little bit clearer. We have an encroachment of these two lines, and so therefore, if this distance between here and here is less than 4,000, so then yes, we can draw the bowstring, and we can have it therefore go to the bowstring. However, says Rav Huna, if the distance between them is greater than 4,000 amas, that was very well done. If it's great, in other words, if it's anything greater than 4,000 amas, so now this area in between there's no longer overlap, and now when I'm measuring the 2,000, I no longer can measure from the bowstring, but rather it recedes. Okay, there's a more detailed discussion.
Why does it require an overlap or 4,000 exactly?
Okay, good. So we're gonna
explore. What do you mean?
In other words, when we're gonna measure now these 2,000 amas, we're not gonna go from the bowstring because we no longer have a right to make the bowstring, but rather 2,000 amas are gonna have to start from over here and going up.
Agreed.
Meaning, I'm giving you the very simple version of Rav Huna, meaning a further discussion of the Gemara is where exactly now am I measuring the 2,000 amas from?
Why do you get 2,000 from this side, 2,000 from that side? Because the person can just walk through the rainbow.
Understood. But in other words, what this now, if this was less than 2,000, if it's less than 4,000, now I have the bowstring. And once I have the bowstring, so when I'm measuring northbound, I'm measuring from this point going north. Meaning, I won't be able, it's fascinating, I won't be able to measure from here going north.
So you'd have to draw the line down further.
Just one second.
Why can't you?
Why not draw a measure from here going north? No, so apologies. I could measure from here going north, But in other words, but even if I'm measuring from here going north, how far eastbound can I go? Without the bowstring, I can only go so far as this line over here.
You can only go 2,000.
Once I have the bowstring, so then I can go here and go here. Okay, that would seem to be the simple understanding of Rav Huna, as if there is, but that would seem to be the simple understanding. So the Gemara says, "Umi amar Rav Huna, hachiva amar Rav Huna." The Gemara says, "Now wait a second. You're telling me basically that a 2,000 amma area or in this case, 2,000 amma areas connect two cities." The Gemara says, "But one second. Umi amar Rav Huna, hachiva amar Rav Huna. Chomas yer shenifrat sabim me'avar ba achas ushlish." Amarava Barula Lok, I'm sorry. Right, Vamaravuna Khamata Irshinifrasa Kaman. I'm sorry, Bemevar Ba Achas Vishlish. Gemara is bothered by the following. Here we have a scenario which is different than this scenario over here, and that's the following. I have a city. And the city is broken. Where basically now a natural gap has come right through the middle of the city. Okay. And so now, with the city broken in half, so Rav Huna tells us the following. If the distance between here and here is anything less than 143...
This is 141.
Oh, sorry.
141
yeah,
and a third.
You're 141 right. And a half. 141 and...
A third.
This is a third. Okay. If the distance between, and I'll get to the numbers in just a moment. If the distance between them is anything less than 141 and a third, the cities connect. If it's anything greater than 141 and a third, the cities are no longer connected, and these are two separate cities. Okay? Which means, by the way, if they're two separate cities, and I started Shabbos here, so now, once I get to this point, how far can I walk? Only 2,000 amos. If I get to this point of the city, how far can I walk here? Only 2,000 amos from here. Only if it's less than 141 and a third, the city now becomes one whole city. So now I can walk here, and then from here go 2,000 amos. Now, first of all, what's the magic of 141 and a third? We've discussed this already in the past. We have what's called Ipur Ha'ir, which is 70 and two-thirds. This is 70 and two-thirds. So we'll talk more about it. These are two Ibers. These are two extensions of the city, so therefore it's 72 thirds plus 72 thirds. I'll come back to that point later. In the meantime, however, here's the question that's really straightforward. On the Rainbow City, I'm allowing 4,000 amas, up to 4,000 amas, to connect this and this. On the Broken City, I'm only allowing 141 amas to connect. Okay, that's obviously a huge discrepancy, and that's what bothers the Gemara. The Gemara answers, Lokashik, that's the answer. Lokashik kan beruchachas kan b'shtei ruchos. Gemara says, look, in this city, this is one city. The bow connects it. It's not two cities that were connecting. It's one city, and it's just now a question of to what point are we afforded the ability to look at it at one city. If the 2,000 amas that I could walk in this direction encroaches on the 2,000 amas I could walk from that direction, it now remains one city. But in the Broken City, it's broken to two. It's open on that side and it's open on that side. And now I want to unify two separate cities, so then it has to be no greater than 141.
The way to look at it is that what you're learning is that if you go from the side towards the middle, you're basically leaving the city and you have only 2,000 amos.
Okay. Right? Again, let's take it step by step. Now, let's just finish up. I'll explain that a little bit better later on. Ha'amar Rav Huna chadazimna didnan. The Gemara now points out this idea of Rav Huna of 141 and a third, which is really 2 times 70 and 2 thirds. So the Gemara points out, we know that already. Because Nosin Karfaf Leir Divir Rabbi Meir V'Chachamim Amrim Lo Amru Karfaf Ela Bein Shtei Ayaros. Karfaf, okay, which for our purposes, let's just say simply, 70 and two thirds. Karfaf is to unify two separate cities. V'Idmar Rav Huna Amar Karfaf Lezu V'Karfaf Lezu. Now on this position of the Chachamim, what does Rav Huna say? Two Karfafs, meaning each city is going to get a Karfaf, like we have over there. where we're basically unifying the two halves. So it's 70 and two-thirds for one city, 70 and two-thirds for another city, which makes for a total of 141 and a third. The Chiya Barav Amar Einos Dino Ela Karfa Vecha. Now, Chiya Barav disagrees, and he says, no, it's only one Karfa. But in the meantime, however...
In the meantime, however,
what's very clear is that we already heard this from Rav Huna. Why repeat? The Gemara says, well, it's a little bit different because over here in our case, it was a city that broke. Meaning, for whatever reason, we lost the middle of the city. So maybe I could have argued here, Rav Huna will allow us to go 141. But if it's really two separate and distinct cities, and we're just simply looking to unify the two separate cities, maybe there he won't say it's 141. Maybe there he would agree it would be 72/3. And over there, in the case of the two cities, because they're so close to one another, there's traffic between the two cities. So therefore, I can make the argument each city deserves and gets 72/3 to unify the two cities. Here, however, where there was one city, there was a break in the city for whatever reason, and maybe now the access and the traffic between them is not as great. So maybe I would have made the argument that we're not going to allow each to get 72/3. Stricha, that's why they're both necessary. Okay, one more point for today, and then we're going to finish for today. V'kama have ben yesel akeshes. Now, what we talked about is the distance between one end of the rainbow and the other end of the rainbow. What about this? Is there going to be a maximum distance from here to the bowstring? So, Rabba Barav Huna Amar Alpai Mama. So, the Gemara first quotes Rabba Barav Huna, who says 2,000 amas. Meaning, if this distance from here to here, even if there's overlap.
Right.
So, let's have it now. Right? Even if the distance between here and here is less than 4,000 amas, still, Rabba Barav Huna says, I'm only going to be able to draw the bowstring if the distance from the bowstring is and the longest end of the bow is less than 2,000 amas. So says Rabba Barav Huna. Well, not yet. Just wait one moment. The kama have been yes lakesh Rabba Huna Amar Alpai Mama. Rava Bray de Rava Barav Huna Amar Afilu Yeser Me Alpai Mama. Even if it's greater than 2,000 Amas. Amar Abaye Kavase de Rava Bray de Rava Barav Huna Mistabra. This latter position seems to be the one that is more logical. Very simply, why? Because look, what's the issue? The issue is we want to basically connect this end and this end. And even if this end, let's say it keeps going. Let's say this end goes up over here, and let's say this end goes up over here. In other words, and I want to draw now the bowstring over here, so that Tchum can be measured from the bowstring. Even if the distance is far greater than 2,000 amas.
10,000.
Whatever, it doesn't matter. Meaning, as long as, look, what's the issue? I want to this area over here, this over here, as long as it's less than 4,000 amas, I can always end up carrying. If I'm over here, and I want to carry something and bring it over here, so the argument could be, well, it's beyond 2,000 amos. Look, I know it's circuitous, but I can always go over here, and I can always bring it over there. So in other words, there's a connectiveness to the city, simply based on the fact that anywhere within the bow, I have access to, I have legal access to on Shabbos, which allows us the opportunity to unify this entire area in between. Even if the vertical distance between here and here is greater than 2,000 amas, still, my access, my legal access to all of it, allows me to look at it as one entity. Okay, that's, I told you, the rainbow is the tricky part of today.
With the trapezoid, right? We have, if this distance is more than 2,000 amas.
Good. Huh? Good. That's a very good question. I'll show you something after. Okay, continue for Shlomo for Binyamin Zevikon Mishan Rivka, for Rafal Zaka Avram Ben Yakir Abigail, and Le'ilu Nishmas of Rav Yaakov Ben Yosef.